Continuing our season outlook series here on the Dunked On Basketball podcast, joining us today, Tim McMahon of ESPN. First time you've been on, but definitely the most source Mavericks guy out there. I had a chance to hang out with him during the West Finals when he earned the nickname of Ozzie Smith for being so good at ESPN's shortstop platform. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Man, I had to work hard to get an invitation. I had to buy you a couple beers and really kind of butter you up, but it is an honor to finally make my debut on Dunked On.
Yeah, or, you know, we could say that you hadn't heard of this podcast until May. We could look at the we could look at it from that perspective, too, right?
False.
All right, well, I know you have somewhat limited time, so while you are one of the best shit shooters out there, we better just, like, get moving here. So the Mavericks, another one of these kind of off seasons that we've seen from them the last 5 years or so, huh?
I mean, the Mavericks do what they do every summer, and that's have really ambitious plans and then manage to execute contingency plans when the ambitious plans fall apart. They're always big, you know, they're going for the big fish, and they never get them on the hook with, you know, the exception of DeAndre. We all know what happened there. And then they get in scramble mode, and they put together a team that's good enough for Dirk and Rick to try to drag into the first round of the playoffs. Now, they got lucky this year, because if Durant doesn't go to Golden State, I have no idea what the Mavericks do. They have no idea what the Mavericks do. We can debate whether it's good fortune to have Harrison Barnes on a max contract, but I know that the Mavericks are a better team with him than with salary cap space, and we know what salary cap space has done for them over the last 5 years, which is not a whole lot. And then Andrew Bogut, at least for this year, I think is actually the biggest upgrade. I mean, he can do everything Zaza Pachulia gave him last year, and then he can finish and he can protect the rim, two things that obviously Zaza struggled to do. So I really think Bogut's a tremendous upgrade, and Barnes, we can get into the value of that. He's not going to become a superstar, but he's at least going to be a solid player. And, you know, I think the Mavericks are better off with a solid starter than with very little depth and kind of pushing Justin Anderson into that role maybe a year or two before he's really ready for it.
Why do you think it is that they keep striking out on the big targets in free agency?
You know what? I really firmly feel that the number one factor is Dirk's age. I mean, hey, if this was 28-year-old Dirk, then I think you'd have guys lining up wanting to play with him. But you're going to come for the – and now, you know, this started when he was 33, so you kind of felt like he'd get near the end. Obviously, he's had five mostly really good years since then. But are you going to sign up to play for a guy who you know is in the twilight of his career? I mean, he's the biggest attraction, and I also think the biggest hindrance in terms of their free agency, because right now, you know, if you're making the pitch and it's to Mike Conley, it's to Hassan Whiteside this summer, they're signing up for – probably 2 years of Dirk, and then what? And, you know, I just think that if you look at teams that have been able to get free agents, and we all know how hard it is to get guys to leave where they are because of the financial incentives to stay with it with their home team. But I would say look across the board at teams that were able to sign big time free agents, and they're I would think 90%+, maybe even more than that, have superstar caliber players in their prime already on the roster.
Yeah, I was impressed that they were able to get as far as they could with DeAndre when you consider the amount of talent that the Clippers have and the fact that it's LA versus the amount of talent that the Mavericks had. Chandler Parsons and Mark Cuban actually, I think, did pretty well to even get DeAndre to go as far down the road as he did.
Look, you're absolutely right. They were think about the sales pitch there. And trust me, Cuban and Parsons knew what they were up against. They were trying to get DeAndre Jordan. They were talking him into leaving a significantly more talented team in a much more glamorous city to come here. And the pitch was based on him being the man here and him being, you know, this was going to be a team built around him. And that really, really appealed to him until I think he actually felt the responsibilities on his shoulder. And then he said, boy, feeling kind of safe as a third wheel in Lob City isn't too bad. But it was a heck of a sales pitch. It's the closest they've gotten. It blew up in their face. Parsons is gone now. Cuban's kind of scrambling to try to make Dirk's twilight at least dignified. And, you know, it is what it is. It's obviously a whole different deal if DeAndre comes here. It's a whole different vibe around this franchise, but that's not the reality that the Mavericks are living in.
So I know you're going to have a piece coming out on this relatively soon, but if you can give us a little teaser, what happened with Chandler Parsons? Why is he not back in Dallas? Because it seemed, you know, 2 years ago, it was him partying and in Orlando and sending out that video with Mark Cuban. He was the number one recruiter a year ago, and then all of a sudden he's gone.
I mean, he went from essentially being Cuban's right-hand man and then the number two decision maker in terms of front office shots for the Mavericks to a year later not even getting offered a contract. I mean, the only offer Parsons got from Cuban was, hey, opt in that last year contract for $16 million instead of going on and getting $94 million over 4 years.
Yeah, that was never going to happen. That was it as soon as he opted out.
Right, and essentially what happened, I appreciate you plugging the piece I've got coming up when the Grizzlies come to town, which will be, I believe, November 18th. It'll run that week, and I'll dig deep into this whole thing. But the nutshell version is Chandler Parsons' knee injury concerned Cuban enough, it being the same knee, the second year of surgery, you know, second straight year of surgery, one playoff game, 2 years, two knee surgeries. That concerned Cuban enough to crack the door open for the rest of the, call it chiefs in the Mavericks council, to get to Cuban and convince him that, hey, as much as you love Parsons, it is not in the best interest of the Mavericks long term to make a 4 year, $90-whatever million investment in this guy. And it's not that there's bad blood. It's not that, you know, the other influential figures of the Mavericks wanted Parsons gone. It's just that they feared a 4 year investment in a guy with that knee issue. And, you know, there were some cultural concerns about him, but I think those are all things that would have been smoothed over pretty easily if his knee was healthy and if he finished out last season the way that he was playing when he went down, because he was great the last 2 months that he played for the Mavericks.
Yeah, and really, you know, he had that kind of hybrid microfracture procedure in 2015, and that was always an odd thing to me because he, as I recall, missed maybe like the last 5-6 games of that year, then tried to come back, play on it in game one against the Rockets, and then had to shut it down, and then had this very, very major surgery. I always wondered at that. I mean, the Mavericks have a very good training staff. They have a good reputation, but it's weird to me that he would ever have even been allowed to try and give it a go if his knee was that jacked up.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that Parsons let his competitiveness force him into making a poor decision for himself. And it didn't cost him any money. I mean, the guy still got paid, but he shouldn't have played in that playoff game. I mean, he had no business being out there. I think he was guarded with information that he was giving the Mavericks staff because he so badly wanted to play in the playoffs, and especially, if we're being honest, against his old team. You know, he definitely wanted to prove something in that series. Obviously, that didn't work out. And then this last knee surgery with him, it was a little bit more significant than certainly I was led to believe.
Yeah, he's not even cleared yet.
Yeah, when he went under the knife, I was told 6 weeks. I was told pretty much, you know, it would be a normal off season for him. And my understanding now is they repaired the meniscus instead of just kind of cleaned it up.
Yes.
So that turns it into a 4 to 6 month thing, and then they're going to err on the side of caution. Everybody I talk to is completely confident that he's going to be, you know, I don't know if he'll play in the opener, but they're confident that he will be himself when he returns. But hey, the Grizzlies took a massive risk on that knee. There is no question about that. I mean, two knee surgeries, the same knee. One is a hybrid microfracture, which isn't, you know, it's a version of microfracture, not the death sentence of the old microfracture, although, you know, guys like Jason Kidd and Amari Stoudemire would come back and play on that. I'm not a doctor. I mean, I did spend 8 years in college, but I only got one degree, so I can't talk too intelligent about it. But it's a lesser version of that, but still, that's major surgery. Now, he proved he can come back off of that. Took him a while to get going last season, but once he got in a groove, he played the best 2 months of his career, and he's certainly optimistic that he'll be able to pick up where he left off. But the fact that he's limited and that he's not certain that he's going to play in the season opener, you know, if you're in Memphis and you know, you're a Grizzlies fan, I don't see how that couldn't be concerning.
We'll get back to the Mavericks in a moment, but first I want to tell you about Movement Watches. MVMTWatches.com is the URL, /capspace, of course, to let them know that you came from us. I have to admit, I've never really been a watch guy, and the big reason for that was the ones that I liked usually were $400, $500, and it just didn't really seem worth it, especially because you can just look at your cell phone to tell what time it is. But now that I've become aware of Movement Watches, my opinion has changed, because they are offering the same level of style and quality for 25-30% of the price of some of the nice watches that are in department stores. I got the gunmetal watch with sandstone band. You could check that out, actually. It's got 859 reviews, the vast majority of them positive, of course, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten it. And the price point is $135. The way they're able to do it so cheaply is they're not wasting a bunch of money with middlemen, putting it in department stores, spending money on traditional advertising mediums. And so they're able to get you the same quality, but at a much, much lower price point. So go check that out. MovementWatches.com, MVMTWatches.com, /capspace. Just take a look at their inventory. This stuff is really, really nice. And you're just going to be shocked that you can get watches that look this good for such a low price. MVMTWatches.com/capspace. That's easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. And by going to that URL, you'll get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns at that MVMTWatches.com/capspace URL. All right, well, this is in danger now of turning into the Grizzlies podcast, so maybe we should move on. They did add Barnes. They added Bogut as well. Darren Williams missed. I guess maybe the place to start here is, let's do a little bit of a rundown of where these guys are health-wise, starting with Darren Williams. Devin Harris had off-season surgery, so did J.J. Barea. I think health is a big component for these guys, especially in the backcourt. How are those guys coming along now?
Well, obviously, Dirk's going to need his minutes, man. Bogut did come back to play in the Olympics, but we all know he's going to need his minutes managed as well. And unfortunately for him, he has dealt with a lot of injuries throughout the course of his career. So they're taking it slow with those two guys. Also taking it slow with D. Will and Devin Harris. Neither of those guys are fully cleared as far as, you know, full speed 5-on-5 stuff. I'm pretty sure that they'll both see some, really all those guys will see some time in the preseason, but, you know, they'll be managing minutes throughout the season with those guys. Now, J.J. Barea is completely clear. He actually played the preseason opener. He's good to go. But definitely with D. Will, with Devin Harris, and then to a lesser degree with Dirk and Bogut, you know, really with those guys being more about their age and just need to manage their minutes anyways, they'll keep a close eye on those guys. You know, there's going to be some back-to-backs taken off and things like that through the course of their career, or I'm sorry, through the course of the season. And, you know, I wouldn't expect to see a whole lot of any of those guys during the preseason.
Salah Mejri, too, another guy who I think had off-season surgery. And what's his status briefly at the moment?
Yeah, same boat. Hasn't been fully cleared. You know, right now is doing some stuff in practice, making sure that his conditioning is good. I expect him to play at some point during the preseason. But tell you what, it's going to be interesting to see just how much Salah actually plays during the regular season. He's going to have to earn his minutes, and obviously he can give them.
He has to, though. Who's going to play backup center? Dwight Powell?
Hey, they gave Dwight Powell a $37 million deal.
Yeah, they did. That's right.
$7 million to rack up DNP CDs like he did in the second half of the season. Dwight is he's a workaholic. That's one reason they love him. He's young. He's athletic. He's a tweener. You know, is he a 4 who can't shoot, or is he an undersized 5? Well, he's not as undersized now. He bulked up. He added 25 pounds during the offseason, shed about 10 of it. Now he's a cut-up, lean 245. You know, he finished last season a little bit under 230. And I think that there's a very good chance that Dwight Powell gets the bulk of the backup center minutes. He's not the shot blocker that Saul is, but he is an energy player. I think he's a better finisher. Frankly, he's a guy who I think curries more favor from the coaching staff, because Dwight Powell works his ass off. And Salah, they like him, but sometimes he has to be prodded a little bit.
Yeah, he does seem to be a bit of a character with some of the comments that he had last year about how he had plenty of confidence in himself and just needed the coaches to have confidence in him instead. I remember that.
After his first good game of his career.
So is there anyone who is on this team that, sticks out to you, you think is going to be better than they were a year ago?
Yeah, Wesley Matthews. And again, I'm no doctor, but it's not hard to figure out that a guy who was coming off a ruptured Achilles last year stunned pretty much everyone by actually playing the season opener.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that.
Still led the Mavericks in minutes. I mean, he had the worst year of his career, but it's completely understandable. I mean, who thought he was going to play in the season opener? He didn't get to train all off. He's rehabbing. He's not training for basketball. He's just trying to get back on his feet all last offseason, whereas this offseason, he's full blast. I mean, he is specifically, first of all, he's fired up. He's motivated. He's mad. I mean, Trust me, that is a guy who remembers every single thing that could be even slightly perceived as a slight to him. And he's, you know, he calls me things like asshole because I wrote some things about how important it is to get better production out of him. Now he says it in a loving way, but he's absolutely serious. He's pissed off. He was pissed off all summer. Looks great. I mean, he looks sleek. You know, he's dropped about 7 or 8 pounds. And I can't imagine that he's not going to be significantly better because he's going to be a much better conditioned athlete. And look, you can't criticize him for not being in tip-top shape last year when it was a medical miracle for him to get on the floor in the first place, much less lead the Mavericks in minutes. But he's in much better shape now. You know, he'll have his legs. And I don't know how much he can do as a creator. I don't know how much he can do off the dribble. It's never been his game. He thinks he can do more. We'll see. I would be really surprised, though, if his three-point percentage, which was the worst of his career last year, doesn't shoot back up into the high 30s where he's pretty much lived his entire life.
Yeah, I thought the biggest difference for him offensively last year, and I thought he is actually better than expected defensively, given some of the limitations you talked about. But he, as you say, he shot 36% from three, which is still a little bit above average, but 50% at the rim, only took 20% of his shots within 10 feet, over 60% of his shots were from three. And that's nice to be efficient there, but he used to post up. He used to get out and transition and get to the basket. He only had 2 dunks the whole year last year. So you wonder, on the one hand, you'd say, hey, he's further out from the Achilles injury. He was able to train. On the other hand, you can say, well, he's going to be turn 30 this year and he has an Achilles injury in his rearview mirror. So maybe he's just going to be a different player, as so many guys are after his. But I agree with you. I think he's got to be a little bit better. I mean, that, you know, shooting 39% from two, you have to expect that he'll do a little bit better there. The guy I want to ask you about, though, is Dirk. Could this be the year that we finally see the drop off from him? I thought that was going to be last year. I was entirely incorrect about that, although he's still, you know, his defense is at the point now where it's always going to be impossible for these guys to have really an above average defense with him playing a lot at power forward. But could this be the year, or do you think he holds on to it for another year?
I like how Dirk says that they've got a chance to have some really good defensive lineups when he's not on the floor. But, hey, it's no secret. I mean, everything they do schematically on the defensive end with Dirk on the floor is to try to mask his weaknesses. And but it's worth it because, hey, look at the plus-minus numbers with him and without him. I mean, he is still the man here. I mean, he is still by far the most important player on this team. And, you know, there has been decline. There's been drop off. He can't face up and put it on the floor like he did. I mean, go back and watch the 2011 finals. He ain't catching the ball above the elbow and just carving people up like he did for so long. That's just not part of his game. He can't create his own stuff. Now he can still post up and obviously knock down that one legger, but you want to limit how often you're asking him to do that at the ripe old age of, what is he, you know, 37, 38? I forget. He's almost my age, which is a miracle because I'm sore whenever I play like 3 hours or, you know, 3 games of pickup ball, much less, back to back. But he's always going to be 7 feet tall. He's always going to have a beautiful shooting stroke. He's always going to be able to knock down that one legger. And, you know, while I think his athleticism in his younger years was underrated, you know, because he did carve guys up off the dribble. He did used to be able to run the floor pretty well. It's not like his game was ever based on athleticism. So I don't know that you're ever going to see a really, really just fall off the cliff type of decline from Dirk. But you do understand that at this point, he's more or less a stationary player.
One lineup that I think I would try out if I were Carlisle is actually playing him at center, which you'd think is going to be a defensive disaster. But for the first time, really, they can put three good defensive wings who can switch around him with Anderson, Barnes, and Matthews, and all guys who Anderson, we'll see how his three-point shot comes along, but theoretically a threat from out there. If you could have those three guys around him, you're not going to have any rim protection, but maybe you have enough switching and defense on the perimeter that you can even prevent penetration to begin with, and then you can get out and transition with those guys and then have Dirk coming for the trail three at the end of breaks that don't work out. I think that might be a lineup I would look to if I were Carlisle.
I think it's something that he will definitely dabble with. There's no question about that. And, hey, they did that last year. I mean, right before Parsons got hurt, Dirk was starting at center. Parsons was playing the power forward. Parsons loved that because then he's matched up with power forwards. His ability to put the ball on the floor was really maximized in those situations. Obviously, Dirk spaces the floor in ways that no center ever has. And that lineup totally lit it up offensively. Now, there's going to be some defensive issues. I think Barnes doesn't have the playmaking ability that Parsons did, so you're not getting that element. But like you said, he is more athletic. I think that is a better defensive lineup. But, yeah, I would absolutely think you're going to see some of that, you know, quote-unquote small ball, even though it's not like playing a seven-footer at center is necessarily small ball, but it is knocking everybody up. Knocking everybody up a spot in terms of Barnes, and I don't know. I would want to limit though the amount of time that Wesley Matthews plays at three. And if you're putting Anderson on the floor, then clearly Anderson can play the three there. I do think it is a disservice to Wes to ask him to play a lot of the three. He's not a good rebounder, you know, despite being a tough guy. He's never been a good rebounder, even, you know, pre-Achilles. And, you know, he's 6'5", so if he's guarding the bigger wings, you know, he's going to compete. But, you know, that's asking an awful lot out of him. So instead of going the three guards, which they'll still probably do, especially now they've got, you know, in addition to Devin and JJ coming off the bench, you know, they've got Seth Curry, who certainly can shoot it, and I think he's going to factor into the rotation. You know, there might be stretches where he doesn't, but I do think he's going to have an opportunity to see the floor. But I agree with you. I would rather go with three kind of long, strong, athletic wings instead of two small guards and then Wes at three.
Yeah, and there also are going to be games where Bogut either gets into foul trouble or just is ineffective. He's one of the most inconsistent players in the league, although he still can be a big force when he's on. It's just those times seem to be more and more rare as we go on. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned Seth Curry. How is the playing time going to shake out at the one to you? Is Curry really going to factor in? Are they liking what they're seeing from him in camp so far? Devin Harris obviously is in there. Barea, D. Will. How do you see that playing time shaking out at the one?
I mean, Rick Carlisle's on record saying Seth Curry is going to be a factor. Now, I don't predict Rick's rotation. Okay, that's bad business because every time I think I've got it figured out, then the dude's a DNP CD for like eight straight games. It's like, hold on, that guy was just in the. I mean, look at last year. Look at Dwight Powell. Last year, early in the season, he's playing a ton. Okay, he's playing well. The middle, like two-thirds of the season, I mean, even after the All-Star break, he's racking up DNP CDs, plays, you know, gets back in rotation, plays well at the end of the year, then they give him a four-year, $37 million contract. So when it comes to young guys, it's like the Texas weather in terms of their spots in the rotation a lot of time with Rick Carlisle. I mean, if you don't like what you're seeing, you know, just wait a day or two. It could change drastically. Having said that, a lot of this stuff's probably going to figure itself out. I mean, do you think D. Will's going to play 82 games? Do you think Devin Harris is playing 82 games? Do you think J.J. Barea is playing 82 games? I mean, all those guys, especially the first two, have had injury issues. They're all up in their 30s. There will be stretches where Seth Curry is going to be in the rotation because he absolutely has to be in the rotation. The question is, does he take minutes away on a regular basis from a Devin Harris? And I would think that would be the most likely candidate there, simply because this team is so starved for guys who can create off the dribble. D. Will is clearly the starting point guard, but J.J. Barea is their best pick and roll playmaker. So I think he's an absolute necessity in the rotation.
Any other playing time issues that you think Coach Carlisle is going to have to play out? We talked about backup center a little bit, but any others that come to mind for you?
Does Quincy Acey factor in? You know, he's another guy that they like because he's young, he's athletic. You know, he's kind of a dirty work guy. You know, is he going to see a lot of the time at the four? You know, or is it a situation where Harrison Barnes is essentially your starting small forward and backup power forward, like Parsons was last year, like Sean Marion used to be for this team? So that'll be interesting. But I do think if you're looking at the Mavericks from a long-term basis, the biggest questions are how much are guys like Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell, who are kind of fringe rotation guys, kind of in and out of the rotation, but young guys who they consider to be foundation pieces, might be overstating it, but part of this core for the Dirk's Twilight and beyond, how much do they progress and how much is Rick Carlisle ready to really rely on them this year, to me, is one of the bigger questions.
How ready is Anderson to contribute? He was another one of those guys. They didn't play him at all. All of a sudden, once they had those injuries, they went to like a really slow pace, defensive-focused mm-hmm. group, won a bunch of games at the end of the year to get it in the playoffs. He was a huge part of that. Do you think that Coach Carlisle is going to trust him this year? What are they going to be able to get out of him?
I do think that he's going to see, you know, I think he'll be a 20-ish minute per game guy. You know, whether Barnes is bumping up to the four or not, obviously there's going to be time available at that backup small forward, and that's Anderson's job. I think if they didn't get Barnes, Anderson was going to be the starter. That might have been a little bit early, but he played awfully well at the end of last year. He's going to guard people. He's going to hustle. He's got a chance to be one of the best shot blocking wings in league. I mean, he's got a knack for just the spectacular block shot, and you know, but he doesn't necessarily hunt them. I mean, he's a really just a savvy shot blocker who can get up off the floor. You know, he's got long arms. The question is, what can he do offensively? He's got to be able to shoot the three. I mean, if he can just knock down open threes and move the ball, then he can be a valuable piece. But he's never going to be a creator. You know, he's not a guy who, like in the summer league, he sucked. I mean, he was bad.
Disappointing for him this year.
Yeah, but that's because as the go-to guy, he sucks.
Yeah,
I mean, he's never going to be a guy who's going to scare you off the dribble or is going to, you know, be a facilitator or any of that. But he is a guy who understands his role and, you know, embraces it and can really kind of – you give him a specific role, he's going to do everything he can to excel in that role. And what that means right now is he's got to develop as a three-point shooter. Shot it really well last year at Virginia. Obviously, it's a step back in the – you know, a couple steps back in the NBA. But if he can just be a guy who moves the ball smartly and knocks down the open threes that are going to come to him, and then I think he can be a really, really good role player. The upside for him is a bouncier version of Jay Crowder. Now, Jay's better putting the ball on the floor and those kind of things, but I do think that's the upside for Justin Anderson, and that's a pretty good upside.
Yeah, he was only 22 out of 83, 27% on threes last year, and was not really known as a shooter before that last year at Virginia, where, as you said, he shot it really well. What do you think is the crunch time lineup, both A, that Carlisle would use, and B, if you see it any differently, that he should use?
Well, look, one thing that I can guarantee you is it'll be matchup driven. I mean, the starting lineup is one that I think will finish a lot of games, but then I also think there's games, you know, we've talked about Dirk at center. I think there's games that, you know, they'll put Anderson on the floor with Wes and with Harrison Barnes and play Dirk at center if that's the matchup. And, you know, Bogut's going to need to – he's going to need to understand – that there's going to be nights where he isn't part of that finishing five. I mean, you know, there were nights last year where Wesley Matthews wasn't, you know, where Chandler Parsons wasn't. So Rick has definitely proven that he's a guy that's going to coach by feel and not necessarily commit to a crunch time closing group. But I certainly think that their starters, for the most part, will be their crunch time lineup.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine that would probably be the case. And maybe Bogut could be subject to some hacker concerns before the last 2 minutes. Maybe that'll be an issue, or just there'll be games where I could see a lot of times this would happen with Golden State too, where Bogut would get into foul trouble early in the third quarter, and then coaches a lot of times will kind of just forget about guys who have been in foul trouble and just never bring them back in, especially if it's a center who's maybe not like an absolute kind of core piece. All right, what do you see as the key strengths of this team?
Intelligence, really, that's the one that stands out, because I can't sit here and tell you that there's a lot of other things that just jump off the page. I don't look at this and say it's a great shooting team. I do think it's a better defensive team than last year, but when Dirk's your best player, you're never going to be a great defensive team. But I do think there is a lot of proven veteran basketball IQ on this team, and I think they've got one of the top two or three coaches in the league.
Yeah, that strikes me as true. Even shooting, they don't really have anyone on this team other than Dirk, who you look at as a great shooter. Maybe Matthews can bounce back to where he was those last couple of years in Portland.
If he steps into, if he earns those minutes, obviously there's optimism that, he's not his brother, but there's optimism that he can be a 40-plus percent three-point shooter if he's getting open looks.
Yeah, and if he plays more, I think a pick-and-roll between him and Dirk would be something that would be really difficult for teams to deal with. I hope he plays more, because I think they're going to be bad on defense anyway, so you might as well just try and put some good offensive lineups out there. And then as Dirk alluded to, I think they could be pretty good defensively at times with their second unit if they can go with those three wings with Dirk out of the game, have Bogut or someone like Mejri in to block some shots. Weaknesses, I think we alluded to it, just quickness, defense, like those kind of pop out a little bit.
Yeah, and more, I mean, look, if you look at the way they got in the playoffs last year, after Parsons went down, they'd lost like 7 of 9 games at a stretch. They dipped under 500, and I was trying to figure out who I was going to cover in the first round of the playoffs, because it wasn't going to be the Mavericks. But then they completely changed the style of play. They went to that more grinded out, defensive-minded, run the shot clock style, and I do think they'll be more like that. Now, the problem offensively with this team, we talked about shooting. They're an okay shooting team, with the exception, obviously, of Dirk being one of the great shooters of all time, especially for a 7-footer. But they don't have a whole lot of guys who can put the ball on the floor and make something happen.
Yeah.
D. Will at 32, that's not, he's more of a pull-up jump shooter at this point. He's not an attack off the dribble, get in the teeth of a defense and make things happen. Harrison Barnes, I mean, that's the biggest question about him. Is he ever going to be anything more than a marginal ball handler? And that's a tremendous downgrade from Parsons, because Parsons is a guy who's got a good feel for the pick and roll. And that's something they're hoping they can kind of teach Barnes. But, I've talked to people who know him well, and they just say, hey, he's an explosive athlete, but he just doesn't have that fluidity necessary to create off the dribble. He doesn't have that vision. So yeah. Rick Carlisle's working with him. He's working to kind of try to get him to see the game better. He's working on really minute details of footwork to try to improve his ability to create. But it's a huge question mark. And I mentioned earlier, the best creator on this team is 32-year-old, 5'3.5", J.J. Barea. I mean, and it's not close. And I love J.J., I love the fact that he's about the same height as my 10-year-old daughter, and he's a great guy. But he is by far the best creator on this team, and that's not a great thing. I mean, the lack of ability to put the ball on the floor and make things happen for yourself and others is a huge, huge, huge concern for this team offensively.
Yeah, with Barnes, you could say, all right, they're working with him on this stuff. Well, it's not like Golden State had like bad player development. If you look at what they've done with everyone else on their roster, who's basically exceeded expectations over the years. And they've tried him when he was younger as a creator back in the Mark Jackson era, especially his second year. And he really failed in that role and has never been efficient that way. And even going in early in his second year, I said, hey, when people were talking about him as maybe being better than Klay Thompson, I said, all right, slow down. Like, this guy's never going to be an all-star because he just doesn't have the shake. He doesn't have the moves off the dribble. Now, I will say, with Team USA, a couple of times in garbage time, he looked more confident handling the ball. He had a sweet behind the back off a pick and roll last night in the or a couple nights ago in the preseason game, and pulled up for three. Not the sort of thing you usually see from him. So maybe with just those psychological shackles, if not actual shackles off, he could be better. But yeah, I will believe it when I see it with these guys. Really quickly, any chance that Jonathan Gibson gives them anything? Is he even going to make the team? I feel like he actually was a great scorer in China. Yeah. He's older, but especially running pick and roll with Dirk, maybe he could could be effective. I liked what I saw from him in summer league, but of course that's summer league.
Yeah, and yeah, he had a guy averaged 40 some odd per game last year in China. He's got a good chance of making the team. There's essentially, you know, Carlisle will say there's seven guys competing for two spots, but really it's four guys competing for two spots. He is the one guy in that group who does have a guaranteed, fully guaranteed contract this year. It's the minimum, but he's still, you know, that money is fully guaranteed. So I like his chances to make the team. But you know what? We're talking about the guards that they have, and D. Will, J.J. Barea, Devin Harris, Seth Curry, Jonathan Gibson, probably in that order on the depth chart. So yeah. I think there would have to be either he would have to just be spectacular or there would have to be some injuries for him to be much of a factor in the rotation.
All right, so give me your official Tim McMahon predicted record for the Dallas Mavericks this year.
I would take the over in Vegas, because last look, it was like 37.5, 38.5. I think this team is what it's been, just with different faces. That means they'll win somewhere in the low 40s. You know, they'll be better than 500. They'll win 42 to 45 games, and we'll see how good the rest of the West is. Last year, 42 was somehow good enough for the sixth seed. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think they're fighting somewhere for those last couple spots in the playoffs, and whether they make it really depends on how some of these other teams, you know, is Minnesota ready to make the jump? Is New Orleans going to get an MVP season out of Anthony Davis that, you know, they need to be a factor? You know, Houston some of these other teams, based on history, I'm going to say they're going to win 43-44 games and claim the eighth seed. And then we'll get the Harrison Barnes, Andrew Bogut going back to Golden State for the first round of playoff story.
I predicted them just under on my podcast that came out on Tuesday with the Western Conference over-unders. I think that Dirk is just going to have at least a subtle decline this year. I think that they're going to get less out of Bogut than people expect, and then center could be really an enormous problem. That while Bogut has a higher ceiling than Pachulia, I don't think he's going to give them the consistent production that Zaza managed to last year. And, you know, still not quite a believer in Barnes' ability to create point guard. These are some of the worst point guards in the league, even if Dirk does help them. And how many minutes Dirk can play, I don't really know. So I think it'll be lower, but they certainly have surprised me before. But it's kind of funny when the same forces of age and, you know, just stop gapping it that made me predict that they would be a little bit worse in past years than they ended up being are still there. And so I'm going to go with those trends over perhaps the coaching and the Dirk trends, which are, you know, the two things that they still have going for them. So last question here. If you had to give the Mavs front office, ownership, general managers, etc., i.e. Mark Cuban, a grade since that 2011 championship, what would it be?
D. I mean, it's a D in an advanced placement course. I mean, they enrolled themselves in the most difficult possible course. They opted to take a really ambitious, really tough route of value salary cap space, because you're going to go get a superstar or superstars to pair with Dirk, because they didn't want to be on the mediocrity treadmill, to use the Cuban term.
I think he actually probably gives those interviews when he's on an actual treadmill too. That's probably why he thought of that analogy.
Well, let's make sure we're accurate. Stairmaster, not a treadmill. here's the thing. They are exactly where they didn't want to be. They are the definition of a team on a mediocrity treadmill. They're fighting for the last. You know, last year they managed to get six, but they're fighting for one of the last couple spots in the playoffs on an annual basis. They've done precious little in the draft over the last decade. They've drafted two legitimate NBA players. One, Jay Crowder, they was a throw-in on the Rondo deal, which we all know what a disaster that was. One's Justin Anderson, who we'll see what he becomes. But I can't give them better than a D, because they didn't execute their really ambitious goals. The draft has been a disaster. And in terms of the trade market, you know, the two biggest moves that stand out have been the Lamar Odom deal and the Rajon Rondo deal, two of the most disastrous deals over the last 5 years made by any team that's not in Brooklyn.
Yeah, you know, I think, because I was going to ask you, okay, what would you have done differently? And from my perspective, I don't know what I would have done differently as far as like the free agency. I probably would have grit my teeth and let Tyson Chandler go back in 2011. That's one of the big things. And actually, if you look at where they were in 2014-15, their offense was so good the first half of that year before they made that Rondo trade. Jay Crowder turned out to be one of the best contracts in the league. He's, you know, at least in the East, wouldn't be in the West, almost a borderline all-star. And then there was that pick that they could have used this year as well. I think Justin Anderson might is looking like an okay selection where he was picked last year. You mentioned the Odom trade. So yeah, I think if it weren't for those trades, I would probably have him at like a C+, just because I realize they haven't succeeded, but I don't know what other plan you really could have realistically pursued with Dirk still on the team, since you're not going to tank it, obviously, when he's still around. But they just, I mean, that Rondo trade is like one of the top five worst probably of the last 5 years, I would say.
Right. And look, I liked the decision to go for it. Now, that is a not a popular opinion in Dallas, certainly not with hindsight. And by the way, it was not a popular decision within the Mavericks front office. I am rather certain that Mark Cuban basically decided that he was not going to listen to his, you know, basketball people and made that call on his own. But I didn't think that I thought that was a one-time championship team that, because of the age of the players, was not going to repeat, certainly not,
yeah,
you know, with a condensed lockout schedule. So I like that. Obviously, it didn't work out, and you have to grade it on execution. But I'm not going to criticize the plan. The execution you can criticize. You know, you have to deal with the facts. I'm not going to criticize the plan. The Rondo deal, that's the one that stands out as...
Because we all knew that was going to be terrible at the time, I think. I think everybody panned that.
Rick Carlisle told them he did not want him. He said he was going to kill the spacing. Now, he said Rondo was going to be a really bad fit, but essentially what happened there, and Rick stood down once he understood this, was Dirk wanted the deal done. Dirk has traded for two point guards during his time. He's traded for Jason Kidd. That one helped deliver a championship here. Got off to a rocky start, but certainly ended with a ring, and you can't complain about that. So he made one great deal for a point guard, and then the Rondo deal was a total disaster. Now, hey, I understand. Jameer Nelson was awful. I mean, he had no business starting at point guard, and they were going to get torched in the playoffs because they were going to have to face a good point guard pretty much no matter who they played. But that was one of the best offensive teams in that small sample size of all time. I mean, in terms of efficiency, it was the best ever, and it totally screwed it up. And then the Crowder, just including Crowder, and it looks so awful. You just paid Harrison Barnes $60 million more than Crowder got. We're talking 5 years, 35 for Crowder, 4 years, yeah. 94.
And Crowder is way better than Crowder, him.
That one stings. Boy, does that one sting.
Yeah, plus the first round pick too, which it ended up, I think, just being Gershon Yabusele, which is not the absolute end of the world. But
Look, you don't have to show off your pronunciation skills. I was just going to say that for dude.
All right, man. Well, I'll let you get out of here. Where can we follow you on Twitter, which also an excellent Twitter account, especially during the off season for Mav stuff.
At ESPN_McMahon. I know you love my college football talk. You love my Dallas Cowboys commentary. Hey, have I been suspended from the essential basketball list yet this football season?
No, you actually, you've been kind of chilling out with that a little bit. So I have not had to remove you yet. We were almost halfway through already. So yeah, besides
that. Every time I tweet something football, I think, oh boy, this is going to. Cause a ripple on that essential basketball list.
Well, be careful. Like, I think like 1,500 people follow that list. It's really going to make a huge dent in your subscriber base.
Trust me, I think about it every single time.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on, and looking forward to hanging out with you during the season.
Appreciate you having me.
One of my favorite products that we've ever had on the show is the Naked 3D Body Scanner, the world's first home body scanner. The way it works is you step onto it, a scale rotates you around in a matter of about 20 seconds, and scanners embedded in a mirror in front of you take a 3D image of your entire body. What's the use of this? Well, it can tell you what your body fat is in an accurate way, which is huge. There are not that many systems out there that will do that. It can also let you know what the circumference images of various body parts in case you have some sort of an imbalance. You can see it and correct it. And perhaps most importantly, it'll create what's called a heat map, where it compares your scan with previous scans of yourself and determines whether you've gained muscle, lost fat, and shows you exactly where that's occurred. It's really hard to motivate a lot of times working out in those first 2-3 weeks because the naked eye isn't going to notice anything. The scale, you're going to fluctuate a lot just based on water weight, or if you're putting on muscle and losing fat, the scale's not going to tell you that. But this can catch differences that are not perceptible on a day-to-day basis just looking in the mirror, and that's really, really motivating. That kind of progress can be the difference with sticking with a fitness regimen, and it's something that you can keep for years and years. These scanners have always cost more than $10,000, really only available at certain health clubs that charge a ton to get scanned, but you can get yours now for only $699. Lock in that price, and when it comes out in the spring of 2017, you can be among the first to get yours. It's going to cost $1,000 then, but you lock in that price now, and you only have to put down a $95 deposit as well. You can find out more about the product and also let them know that you came from us by entering the URL naked.fit/capspace. Capspace is easy to remember. We talk about it all the time on the program. naked.fit/capspace is the URL to let them know that you came from us and get started on really changing your fitness regimen by getting accurate measurements. naked.fit/capspace is that URL.